From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about designer-developer collaboration with the designer-developer duo, Owen Shiflett and Megan Zlock. I'm your host, Leia Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Ellis Lab. The wait is over. The public beta of Expression Engine 3.0 has launched. You're invited to kick the tires and submit feedback to make the next release of the most flexible CMS even better. Go download it now at expressionengine.com/beta.
Today, we're talking about a subject near and dear to both Leia's and my hearts, how designers and developers collaborate and work together. Joining us are Megan Zlock and Owen Shiflett from Viget Labs. Megan is a front-end developer at Viget, while Owen is an art director and designer. Welcome to the show, Megan and Owen.
Hello. Hi.
So, Megan, can you tell a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So, I might be a front-end developer and do very technical work during the day, but I kind of spend my nighttime doing more creative work, and I like to do illustration. I'm also a bit of a gamer, so that takes up a little bit of time, too.
Fun.
So you like moonlight as a creative person, but you're technical during the day.
Yes, which is a really nice balance, I find, because I'm kind of using two different sides of my brain during just different parts of the day.
Yeah, it probably makes you better at your job to be to have sort of a bigger, well-rounded perspective.
I like to think so.
And how about you, Owen?
Yes, so I'm an art director and designer here at Viget. I focus on both the strategy and the production. Mm-hmm. I love both of them equally. I get my hands dirty with paper and pencil almost every day. Still get to work on the computer quite a bit. In my off time, I'm also a gamer. I feel very strongly that that gaming has a lot to do with you know, what we do on the web in terms of like interaction. So it's fun to incorporate some of those things into my process.
Cool. So do you guys ever game with each other?
We have not so far. I've been trying to get Megan to get a PlayStation 4, but we're still working on that.
Yeah, I think we have some platform differences at the moment. I mostly play on my 3DS.
Fun.
Someday.
Someday.
So can you talk a little bit about your roles at Viget and how a project team is started? You know, every agency is kind of different. So I'm just curious if you have the same thing for every kind of project or client, or if it varies, and what the sort of structure turns out to be?
Sure, I can answer that. Each of our teams at Viget usually has a designer, a front-end developer, which is a little different where we have front-end developers and then also developers who kind of specialize in more back-end code, typically Rails. So we kind of have that divide in our developers. And then, of course, we have a project manager, a user experience designer. And those are our basic roles, but then we might have more than one of each of those roles depending on the project. But that's the typical breakdown.
Do devs and designers work directly with the client, or is that something where you mentioned you have a project manager? Is that there's one person who's like the main conduit?
I'd say there's probably more interaction between the designers and our clients than front-end developers, but it's something that we're constantly working on and trying to change that. So we have more of a focus around project teams who are interacting at different times with the client. We feel really strongly that allowing people to get more in front of the client produces better work.
Yeah. Is that something that, especially if you have like a new designer or particularly a developer on the team that may not have a lot of experience dealing with the client, that there's a, you know, like a warming up period, getting them used to what that process is like? Or is that something that you feel that the new people who come in are already embracing that concept of working with the client?
I'd say that we split that kind of both. So we have individual labs for, you know, front end development, for example, development, project management, and design. And we handle some of those things when new people start to kind of get them ramped up. But yeah, there's definitely a little bit of a safety net that we provide on project teams in order to get people ramped up and into the role that they're going to be performing. I'd say just generally speaking, I'm a big fan of early collaboration on the team and early collaboration with the client. So people have a better understanding of like the client needs. It's easier to hear it directly from the client than it is to be hearing it from you know, from someone else who's collected that information. So we'll do a pairing of both of those things, really, where we'll have high-level overview but we'll also have collections of time to actually meet with a client to understand them and get to know them a little bit better.
And there are some cases where we'll have some level of mentorship, and those will be sometimes when we might have two designers or two developers on a project, if you do need somebody more experienced to chip in now and then.
Okay, so speaking of that, then do you and Owen work directly together, or do you tend to have, again, like, you know, a project manager or something help facilitate?
Directly, definitely.
Absolutely.
The project manager helps keep us on focus and on task and deadlines, of course, but for the most part, we're meeting face-to-face. The project manager might help time some of those things, but it's really just us working together.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like nothing beats working together face-to-face.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's, for me, it's a bit of a contrast to some of the early stuff I did in my career where I actually, this was before I was, you know, very skilled at actual front-end development or design. I was doing project management, and I was the conduit between the designer and the developer. It's almost like the developer couldn't understand what the designer was saying, the designer couldn't relate to the developer, and I was the person in the middle who had to translate. And, you know, in our own company, that doesn't happen. You know, Leigh and I always work directly together, but we wouldn't even want that because you do miss that opportunity to, you know, if you don't understand each other, then you take the time to understand what the other person is saying, mm-hmm. because something was lost with that sort of older model that I had to follow. So how much do you guys have any overlap in your skill sets? I mean, Megan, you mentioned in the beginning that you explore your sort of creative side and illustrate and things like that in the evenings. But in terms of, you know, your skill sets, you know, Owen, do you code at all? Megan, do you do any design work as part of your front end responsibilities at Viget?
Also, I'll date myself a little bit. When I actually started doing design, it was in 2003. I graduated from school and I actually started out as a Flash developer.
Oh, wow.
Designer.
Yeah.
So I learned ActionScript at the time. That I have a general understanding of coding and coding practices. But I really think it's important mostly to have a shared vocabulary and a certain level of empathy, more importantly than it is to be able to dive in and do, you know, heavy JavaScript coding, for example. So for me, it's a lot. It's very much around like being able to speak the lingo, even though I'm not necessarily able to execute upon it.
How about you, Megan? Do you introduce any actual design or illustration or even collaboration with Owen on the design aspects when you two are working together?
Yeah. As far as where my skills lie, I can do some design. I have some level of eye, but I certainly have some weaknesses. I am not great with typography just because I don't have the education there. So I will definitely lean on Owen for things like that. But I have been known in some projects, if we're adding elements to an existing site, I can kind of take the work that's already there and kind of make some new elements in the same style. And some of the designers trust me to do that. Mm. So I have some skill there.
Megan is a very talented illustrator. Don't let her steer you wrong.
You know, Leigh, I'm curious how you feel about our collaboration when it comes to design, because you do the actual work, but there's a whole lot of you and me going back and forth and me interjecting my opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely think it's important, even though I'm, you know, the primary designer, to speak to someone who has a good eye to steer you properly. Because even though I have the education, like, you know, I went to design school and all those kind of things, the first thing I always put up isn't often the final product. You know, when you're stuck in your own head, it's hard to really be critical over what's going on until you get that second eye. So I think it's super important. The other thing too is, and Emily does have a really good eye. On top of that, because of that, especially with responsive, I trust her a lot to fill in the blanks in between viewports.
Yeah, so, I find that happens with me a lot too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because it's just like I can't dictate thousands of, you know, variations in pixels. That's just going to be insane. You know, I could establish standards and I could establish a system saying like, here's where the proportions should be and here's where things should fall. But at some point, especially when you hand it over to a front-end developer and there's still all that in between, I need to be able to trust that developer to understand how to fill in the blanks, like without having to explicitly dictate that, okay, that box is now going to be 25% smaller because it's a different screen size. So definitely, I think it's super, super important to have a more collaborative mindset when you're speaking to a developer as a designer.
Megan, you mentioned that you experienced that a bit. Can you talk a little bit about how that's one of the newer things in my repertoire? So, how has that evolved for you now that there may be these sort of in-between stages that may not have been explicitly designed in a comp? Where have you found your input? But falling, is it come sooner or is it when you're actually beginning the coding and can experience it in the browser? Or are you making those decisions in your head earlier on when you're seeing the initial comps?
I do like to be involved earlier on in the process, but I feel like we don't always have responsive conversations quite that soon. There are some times when there's a very complicated UI element that I'm like, what's that going to look like on a phone? So that conversation might come up pretty early. Later on, when I do start to get PSDs or comps and all of that, that conversation starts happening a little bit more, or it might not happen at all. Some designers trust me to kind of go with it. We have a policy at Viget that usually you do get a phone size, a mobile size comp, not always tablet. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'll even tell a designer, like, don't worry about that page. I got it. It's just going to stack.
Right.
So I'm probably a little more flexible than some of our other developers who do want that information. They want to know exactly what you want it to look like, whereas I'm more flexible. Like, I think I got this.
How about you, Owen? Where has that changed your process and your approach to collaboration with the front-end developer having to address something when you're dealing in a responsive project?
Yeah, I think early on, responsive was incredibly difficult. Like it was a point of contention when I first started working through them. Now I see the value, tenfold, hundredfold, a millionfold. But for me, a lot of it has been that I feel like we're starting to move into a trend where some of these things are being a little more standardized, and we know what to expect now. Mm-hmm. So some of those things can get worked out during the design process, and some of those things can get worked out during build out. And I've leaned more and more in the direction of having those things, having conversations earlier on around what expectations are from a strategic standpoint of like, what are we trying to do? I mean, how many customers are looking at this on a mobile site? So we can actually shift focus. If there's a high number of mobile users, then maybe we should actually start with mobile. And really kind of look more broadly at like where we should actually be starting the project to begin with. But as when it comes to Megan and I like working just directly with her to address problems as they arise, and then also work at the beginning of the project to make sure that we're just covering all our bases up front.
And if I could take a step back, I've neglected to ask this, but do you guys work together on every project, or is it majority, or is it just ad hoc and you never really know in a given time period what you two will be working on together?
We don't always work together. We have very different sets of like designers, developers, and everything. It all depends on availability, who ends up on what project, and skill set, not just availability. But we just happen to have worked together on a couple of projects recently, so we're very in sync at the moment.
Well, I would imagine that's probably something that makes it easier for every other project that you two get to do together, because you've sort of already worked out how you like to work together.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a huge benefit. And something that I'm interested in doing more of in the future of there are some companies that work on just definitive project teams that are set when they work for months and sometimes years together. That's not necessarily our model. And it's fun to be able to work with a bunch of different people to learn how different people work.
Right.
But it's also fun to really sit down with someone and work for a long period of time until you get into a really good rhythm.
Viget also has a very good policy of whenever a project ends, we do like a retrospective, and we kind of examine what worked in the project and what didn't. And communication comes into that as well.
I love that you called it a retrospective. It bugs me to no end when people call it a postmortem as if something died. You know what I mean? Like,
totally.
You just created something. Now let's talk about how it's dead. Like, that just makes no sense to me.
Well, I'm curious in regards to this constant communication. Do you have any formalization of this process? For example, like every time you start a project, you always have like one specific meeting, or do you always go on Slack for at certain points of the day. Like, I'm just trying to figure out, are there, like, how fluid and how rigid are the communication patterns when you work together?
I think we always start with the best intentions of having regular meetings and scheduled okay. meetings.
Right.
But then they always just end up devolving into like, hey, can you look at right. this now?
Right.
What Megan means is that I walk down the 80 steps from my desk at one end of the room to her desk at the other. And then I stand, you know, next to her until she acknowledges that I'm standing there.
One of these days I should just leave my headphones on.
I would deserve it. So,
you know, Leia and I find that true as well, even though we're distributed, we aren't even in the same city, but you know, we do keep to a regular schedule of checking in with each other on projects. But, you know, if Leia has something she wants my input, she's immediately jumping on chat and just, you know, I'd love your input now, or mm-hmm. I was thinking this, or I'll shoot her a quick message because, you know, when I was driving to the store, I got some idea that I want her to incorporate.
Right.
And I feel like for us, at least, you know, as long as we have the foundation where we know we have key check-in points, particularly for the client's benefit, but that we can do that sort of as-needed ad hoc collaboration.
I think the structure for meetings is less important as long as you are meeting, and
right.
it's certainly important to meet at the beginning so the developer isn't coming in later. Somewhere in the middle so you can get an idea of progress, and definitely at the end. I love making sure that I'm talking to the designer at the end and that they have an investment and a chance to speak about the developed design.
Yeah, I think investment's really important. I also call it like owner, like mutual ownership. So I think especially during the beginning of the project, this we're, you know, working very closely together to have a mutual stake in the outcome of the project. Because, you know, when things arise and problems arise, which they always will, whether it be client driven or technology-driven or design-driven problems, if we both still have an understanding of what the overarching goal is, and we're both, you know, rooted in that concept, it's a lot easier to overcome hurdles.
So let's talk a little bit about those hurdles. You know, all four of us here, we've gotten into a rhythm. Like it seems like we're all in good teams. However, you know, that isn't always true. And there is almost that stereotype in our industry that designers and developers are butting heads and are always disagreeing. Why do you think that is, Owen?
I think there's some fairness in that stereotype. But I think mostly it's traditionally because we have different goals between development and design. So for example, like if the designer is focused on telling a story and the front-end developer's main focus is delivering that story as fast as possible to multiple devices across the world, I mean, those are still aiming towards the same end goal, but the way that we approach those and the rules that we're defining to solve those problems are very different. So even though we're trying to solve the same problem, we're coming at it from two ends, two different ends of the spectrum.
I agree with that. I think there's also, for designers, I feel like you also have to like really trust your developer to execute your design because the end product is the website. And like no matter how great your Photoshop comps are, it's up to that developer to like make your vision into like a living thing. And I think that some tension can come there because you just have that loss of control as a designer, and it's up to the developer, and the developer might not agree with some things, and you can kind of like butt heads there. And yes, it comes down to look and feel versus performance in some cases.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, as a front-end developer myself, working with designers through the course of my career, I also think another thing that can be part of that misperception or maybe, you know, reality for some of that butting of heads is actually ego. I feel like it enters the picture for both a designer and a developer. And it's like, you know, the designer's just really invested in what they have created, the vision they have. And the developer's really invested in performance or maybe some accessibility thing. And they don't exactly align. And yet the egos prevent them from sort of accepting that the compromise is how the goal is going to be achieved for both. And I think it was interesting, Owen, that you mentioned it's about investment. And I think for me, it's investment in the overall goal rather than your individual goals.
Yep, I agree with that. It's also investing in each other as well.
Like, right. Point.
I want to make sure that it's important to me that I'm having fun. It's also really important to me that Megan is having fun. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to, from an egotistical standpoint, to get wrapped up in yourself or what you're doing to the point where you're making it so other people can't also have fun. So just having right. the empathy in place, which I think comes with practice, right? It's
right.
not inherently something that you're just going to be able to do right out the gate. And honestly, it's been something I've had to work my entire career on, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's one of those skills that, you know, while we're trying to fine tune our technical or even creative skills, we also need to be, you know, fine tuning those, you know, softer skills that let us work better together.
Yeah, I think I actually remembered reading this article that said that empathy can be taught even to sociopaths, that like that it actually is something that you have to practice. And then when you practice it, you actually start to understand and learn, you know, different perspectives. But that only happens when you actually work with other people. I feel like maybe, you know, and this is just me going off on a little, like, you know, side tangent here. Possibly part of the issue with, you know, designer-developer conflicts is that when you're designing, it's just you and your computer at that point. And when you're developing, it's just you and that computer when you're actually doing the production work. And it's a very singular process. And you do that for hours and then you forget you need to talk to somebody else. And then this is also an industry where lots of people work from home. Lots of people also work for themselves. And so they might not have that regular practice that we talked about that you need to have in order to build that empathy muscle.
Or even you get the situation where maybe this might not be so much at like an agency like Viget, but if you're working for yourself like a freelancer, or even us, Leia, when we work as a subcontractor, we get a design that's already been designed. You know, there was no chance to talk to the designer. It came to us to build it out. And then that happens also. And so you don't get to flex that muscle because, you know, you're working with a static deliverable at that point. You're not even working with a person.
We'll do that work occasionally. It's really not typical of Viget, but yeah, we prefer to collaborate. We just always feel that you get better results when you're working with the team. So if we are working with an outside team, we've occasionally done larger integration projects where we'll have one of our front-end developers at Viget working with an outside team who is doing the dev work. If it's not on Rails, if it's maybe on like Drupal or some larger service that we don't specialize in, but we're still doing the front-end work. But we're still very collaborative with their team when we do that. And then we are kind of letting go of some of the execution in that case. Like we're handing over HTML files, JavaScript files, and it's kind of up to them to put all the pieces together. We might have some typical templates and then they have to put some of the pieces together for the atypical templates.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those things we say on almost every episode. It all depends on the client and the project and what the situation is in terms of how the approach is going to be and how a team's going to be put together. So that's a good point of trying to get that collaboration in, even if you aren't, you know, like an all internal team all working together, but you're working with a third party. Also, if you're not able to get that particular collaboration going, what worked for us recently was for a client who was referred to us by the agency, but they had already done the design at that point and they were finished with their end and just needed implementation. And so while we had these designs that had already been approved by the client, we then collaborated with the client on those designs to be like, well, you know, what would you think about making this adjustment here because of XYZ reason for the CMS or XYZ reason for a mobile experience? And so we were still able to make sure that we had some input on the design so that we could execute it in a way that we felt was reflective of the overall client goals. So there's always an opportunity to have more input, I think, or more collaboration on a design, even if you can't get one-on-one with the designer. As long as you're building something, there's still a chance to tweak it and adjust it if it hits the goal better.
So Owen, you know, you work regularly with Megan and other developers and stuff. Let's talk about advice. In what ways do you believe you can best convey how you want a design to unfold that they understand?
Sure. I do a lot of storyboarding here, just traditional paper and pencil storyboarding. I don't like to do any unnecessary comps unless we really have to up front. So but we've been relying a lot more on prototyping now, both hand sketching prototyping, but also using, you know, other tools. I haven't used too many of them myself yet, but we've been playing around with a couple of those online prototyping tools. I mean, really for me, it's like, it all goes back to this, like involving people really early in the process, really early in my process. And being able to kind of talk through what I have going on in my head. I mean, I can just speak from the last project that Megan and I worked on. We actually came up with a lot of ways that we were going to kind of approach the build and even the CMS integration before we even got, you know, before I even stepped foot in Photoshop to design a comp. And a lot of that came from, you know, doing strategy documentation and going through a creative strategy phase with the client to figure out like what their core need was and how they should be seen on the web and through the digital experience. And a lot of that, Megan was, you know, very closely involved in. We were all very involved in that. And we were able to come up with some things early on that really helped to, not only from a front-end development perspective, drive the work that she was working on, but also drive the work that I was working on. So it was just a very kind of all hands on deck kind of approach, which I love.
I kind of like Owen's no PSD that you don't need approach, because I kind of like to fill in the gaps myself, especially with animation stuff. Like some designers like to like go into After Effects and really prescribe what should happen. But I have a little bit of animation experience, a little bit of an animation background. And so I kind of like to do that myself. So instead of them doing that, I'm like, hey, why don't you give me a shot? And then we can talk about it.
It's more fun that way. It's more fun. You're going to get more. There's more options on the table at that point if you have a couple different people looking at it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it sounds like just in general at Vigit, it's just a very collaborative environment in general. It's fluid based on, you know, obviously the project's needs, but also what you individually, how you like to work. Like Owen, you were saying that you do a lot of hand sketching, but, you know, other people are using prototyping. I like hearing things like that rather than a prescriptive, everyone does it X, Y, Z way, because like you said, you're going to get the best results with what people feel good working in.
Absolutely. And we also do a lot of sharing here. So we actually have these micro classes during the middle of the day where someone would have worked with a new tool or been exploring a new kind of way to execute. And they'll give lunchtime talks on what they learned and what they liked and didn't like. So we all have an opportunity to kind of learn and improve and adopt whatever methods we think work best.
Yeah. And the micro classes are completely voluntary. It's not something prescribed. Like if you want to run one, you're not told to run one. You're just like, I learned something new. Let me share this.
That's cool. Yeah. I think Leigh and I are just the two of us, but we're a little bit the same. Anytime I figured out how to do something and how the workflow is best for me. And even though Leah and I, you know, she does the design, I do the front end development, we still do use the same systems and tools. So, you know, you write up some documentation and we send it to the person and say, next time you have to do this, try this and let me know what you think. So it's our sort of own impromptu sharing, because we do want to speak the same language, even though we have to apply it in different areas. Her knowing my processes and the tools that I'm using, even if she's not actively using them as much as I am, it means I can talk to her about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of tools, I'm interested in the tools Megan and Owen are using to communicate with each other. What are the primary ways you do that to share your work?
Our typical tools, I can't say we use anything fancy or unusual. We use Slack, regular email, Basecamp. Those are all the typical tools we use every day. Owen and I personally like to meet in person a lot, but other designers I've worked with, it's easier to catch them on Slack, particularly because we have three different offices, so we do have to do some inter-office communication. So Slack is really helpful. I love sending screenshots back and forth to be like, does this look right yet? Or messing with the staging or integration environments to like put up what I'm working on and say like, what do you think? I don't know if we've quite gotten annotations and like little kinds of notes right yet, or how to share that feedback, because none of our tools quite do that in a great way.
Yeah, they never just seem to provide the kind of back and forth that I'm extroverted to a fault. So like I feed off of the communication and in right. person and being able to really kind of like even do a little sparring, you know, of like kicking around ideas. So for me, I've never been able to recreate that, even if it's over Hangout, by the way. I mean, I think we can, you know, we use Hangout as well when we're working remotely. I've never been able to find a tool that really does it for me in the same way. I mean, Slack does it slightly because we can have, you know, silly animated GIFs to kind of talk about our feelings. But other than that, that face-to-face, whether it be through Hangout or in person, really helps me stay engaged.
Well, I was going to ask, when you have those face-to-face, do you ever do like a follow-up email or note being like, here's what we talked about?
Do we, Megan?
I don't think we do those kinds of things, because when we meet up in person, the changes and what we've decided goes directly into the work.
Right.
I think we could actually get much better about that, because Owen and I have had conversations where a month later we'll be, I'll come to him and be like, I think we said this a month ago. And he'll
that
be like,
I'm the one who has to write everything down. I will remind Megan about something, and she was like, I already handled that, and it will have been a month, and I don't know how she remembers stuff. But yeah, I usually take notes while we're doing the meeting, even though it's in sloppy handwriting, it usually helps me remember. But she's got a fantastic memory. I don't know how she does it.
Yeah, I think Leigh and I think I'm the note taker.
Yeah, no, 100%. If there's not a to-do list written somewhere, like out of my brain, and Emily is the to-do list queen, so I leave that to her capable hands.
But, you know, it sort of worked out well, because I like making to-do lists. It actually helps me feel, you know, it's that silly thing of like, if there's one thing you can control, it makes you feel like you have control over something. So, you know, if we're, you know, on a tight timeline, we've got a lot of stuff going, a to-do list really makes me feel grounded. And so Leia not really caring about that stuff lets me do it, which I like. But then she gets the benefit of being like, oh yeah, we did talk about that one little thing, and thank God she tracked that.
Yeah, totally, totally.
My to-do lists usually take the form of GitHub issues. Mm-hmm. I will occasionally write in pencil. I've got like a little pad next to my desk. I'll occasionally write a to-do list there. But that's usually when I'm feeling a little overwhelmed and I need to like break down the problem I'm solving into smaller bits. That's I can't necessarily do in a GitHub issue, which is like one big ticket, essentially.
Right.
So that's where my notes are, and they make sense to no one else because they're like two words, and I'd check them off, and Owen never sees those.
I do like writing GitHub issues for other people, not for myself.
So you guys use GitHub internally for your development?
Yes. Pretty much all of our projects live on GitHub in different repos. Pretty much everything's private for all of our clients, though.
Mm-hmm.
Though we do have some open source projects that are up there, too.
Yeah, we don't use GitHub very much at all. We instead use Beanstalk as our central repository.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's just, you know, different tools, different people pick different things.
I don't think we've ever quite figured out ticketing either. Like, we'll use GitHub issues on some projects, but that was like what we happened to use on our last project. We keep jumping around on that a little bit. I think we're trying to find the perfect tool, and I think everyone's trying to find the perfect tool, and nothing quite fits yet.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, we have used Unfuddle as well in the past, but I've always felt that was more of a development-focused tool. It doesn't translate well to design tasking.
Right.
So, but again, we haven't found anything that works perfectly.
Opportunity for someone somewhere.
Yeah.
To build that.
Find a ticketing system that works for design and development.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of you guys working together, when you work with a new developer, for example, Owen, do you ever see that they have misperceptions about you as a designer? And if so, like how you might, you know, educate them with how you work and what a designer does and how they should collaborate with a developer?
I've gotten bad raps before, for sure. You know, I'm just a passionate, very passionate designer. Yeah, absolutely. I've run into issues or situations, not even issues, it's just situations before where there was a perceived notion about how I should be working or how they want to work. I like to sit down at the beginning and as part of that kind of like that kind of empathy time, right? Kind of like sit around and stare deeply into each other's eyes and look for the soul and kind of like talk about like how we want to work. So I think I view projects on a couple different levels. One is obviously, did you do a good job for the client? Is it solving the problems? But also, I also like to sit down at the beginning of projects and talk about like, what do I want to get out of this personally? And talk to other people around the room about what they want to get out of it personally. do a little bit of a therapist couch kind of scenario, and also talk about expectations and fears. Like, what do we think is going to go wrong with this project? Kind of a pre-postmortem, and talk a little bit about what we think the struggles are going to be, and try to outline those things. Obviously, you're not going to be able to cover all the bases, but I mean, I do my best to play nice early and play nice often. And I also like to check in a lot with people. So Megan can attest to that. Like, I will just wander down just to see how she's doing that day. Cause I mean, when we're working very closely on a project, like, I mean, you know, 40 hours or 45 hours or 50 hours a week is tied up in working very closely with this other person to solve these, you know, your client's problem. You guys got to be making sure that that everything's going good, that everything's is consistent and everybody's happy. And because the end product's going to be way better that way if everybody's on the same page.
So Megan, what do you think is a common misconception, you know, designers have about coders or code?
I think it's a misconception that developers aren't interested in the design part. There are some developers who like to just get tickets, knock them out, and be done. But not everybody works that way, especially a lot of the front-end developers that I know. Just front-end development's kind of a fuzzy area where you get a lot of designers who kind of shift over and everything. So I think that's a misconception. A lot of us do like to collaborate. We like to be involved early. There are some times where it's hard to be involved early because of time constraints. It's not a lack of interest. It can just be we have another project that's overlapping and we can't. But the interest is certainly there to collaborate, to prototype, to get involved early and get messy and all that.
So sort of like the flip of that question, Owen, what do you wish more developers did to help you do your job better?
I mean, really, it comes down to the getting involved earlier, asking more questions about like what is it, you know, it's like what are we trying to achieve on the project, but also start to ask questions early about like, okay, so if this is a CMS, like I start asking some of the questions that are involved in like what it would require to set up that project, so we can start to incorporate those questions in as part of the actual concepting phase. I think the big thing for me is also like, I never mind hearing that something's not technically feasible. I mean, that's the reality. We're going to, especially if you're trying to do innovative, interesting work, you're going to bump up against walls eventually. The thing that I love to hear though, is that like, you know, we hit a roadblock, but here's two or three other options that we can go down. It's always I love hearing that someone has like, not only like saying like this is not possible, but you know, providing insight and alternate options is like music to my ears.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that a skill that's gotten better for me as Leia and I have worked together more is that when she hands over something for me to look at from a design perspective, I'm trying to think of, you know, before I'm actually in the coding of it, you know, if there's something I'm concerned about execution, I push back on her, but I don't just say, no, we can't do that. I give her a reason, you know, what the challenge will be. And then she may come back, well, what do you think about here? So it's never just, and she never takes offense to it. You know, she's comfortable getting that feedback from me. And I think it's because I make it practical. It's not like, oh, I don't like that. It's no, I can't. I don't think I can actually build that way.
Well, I think part of it too is that, you know, I'm not a front end whiz like you, but I understand front end development. And I also do CMS development. So I also come from that perspective where there's not everything is possible, or if things are possible, it would be, you know, really expensive or time consuming to execute. So I've already got that built in empathy. In fact, actually, with one of our recent projects, I designed something. After I sent it to you, I explained, this is the reason why I decided to go with this type of design, because in the CMS that we chose doesn't have this particular feature yet. So in order to deliver what our client wants now, this is the decision I made for that particular, you know, filter option or something. And that helps prevent a conversation saying, well, why didn't you do it this way instead? And that would have been the, quote, obvious, you know, decision or better user experience. But sometimes even if it's a better user experience, if it's not technically feasible because of the solution you chose for whatever reason, feature-wise, or it would be too expensive at the time to do that, then, you know, I've already established that conversation because, you know, I basically explained, well, this is why I made the design decision, because technically it's not feasible at this time.
Absolutely. It's a level of education that's involved, which is great.
And I think that's pretty powerful for developers too. If you're always giving other options and giving reasons for why you can't do something, then when you do hit a wall and you really can't do something, the designer completely understands. Like if you say no too many times, it's just like, really, you're saying no again? But if you really hit a wall, like if I say no to Owen, he knows like it can't be done.
Not to say that there isn't any moment. I mean, we've been painting this as a pretty picture. I think there are plenty of times where Megan and I have bumped heads and we've had a good, clean argument about things, and the actual final end result wasn't what either of us was expecting it to be. Like it took a new direction. So I don't want it to seem like we're always like, you know, high-fiving in the hallway. So, you know, I mean, there are moments where a good, I wouldn't say argument, but a very good, deliberate, heated discussion will yield some great stuff. And it's something that ability to do that and to do it professionally, I feel is like a really great thing to be able to have as part of the, in the tool set. Just have a good argument sometimes just to work stuff out.
Is that something that you guys naturally fell into, or have you had to work on how to make a debate productive?
Oh, absolutely. Had to work. Megan, do you want to take that?
I think Owen and I kind of have a good flow, partially because we have complementing personalities. So Owen is very extroverted and I'm like very introverted. So he'll have like a lot of feedback and everything, and I'll kind of internalize that. And we kind of go back and forth with that. And I kind of like reason with the info he's given me and everything. So I think we kind of have a unique flow that's just, we have good personalities to work with each other. But some of it you do have to work at. Sorry, I'm not wording this very well.
I've come from an agency background where being a bully was more acceptable and actually championed. And we don't tolerate that at Vigit. So I definitely learned over the years to be a better communicator. You can still have a heated, good argument about something without being a bully. So I think that's a big thing for me over the years, is learning how to, you know, exactly what you said, turn something from an argument into something that's actually, that you're going to get something out of the end of it.
Sure. Did you consult anybody or read any books or websites that helped fine-tune arguments into an actual useful debate?
We're actually, so you had mentioned soft skills earlier. We're really big on soft skills as well as our hard skills. So actually, a lot of the stuff I've picked up while I've been here, my boss, Tom Osborne, is a fantastic soft skills kind of guy. I mean, he knows how to talk. I've learned so much from him about having to talk to clients and interact on a daily basis with coworkers. It's been a huge thing for me since I've been here. But as for book-wise, I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of those things that you really can learn some of the most from just seeing it in others. Like you mentioned your boss, and I recall the conversation we had recently with Dan Mall and how he tries to carry himself in a certain way as a professional, and that is a powerful way for him to show others how they should act and how they should treat others. I think it all circles back ultimately to empathy. If you have that discussion like you've described, Owen, in the beginning, where you're sort of not just figuring out what the client's goals, but, you know, what does the developer want out of it? What does the designer want out of it? And then all of a sudden you're thinking about this person as a person, not just this cog who's going to help you get something done. You know, you care about how they feel. I know that because I care so much about how Leia feels and her satisfaction in a project, that I feel like I'm a better communicator just because I'm concerned with how anything I say back to her is going to be perceived. Not because she's thin-skinned, she's the opposite. It's just that it's up to me to take the time to make sure I'm communicating clearly. You know, it's not someone, whether they're thin-skinned or thick-skinned, it's up to me to how I talk to them.
Couldn't agree more.
I actually have two books that I would recommend people read if they want to have more, let's say, useful conversations. The first book is called Crucial Conversations, Tools for Talking When Stakes Are High. I remember skimming through the book. Sorry, I didn't read thoroughly. But still, what I got out of it was just like really, I found it, you know, just really useful. Even if some things could seem obvious, sometimes you just need to have people outline an actual scenario and just alternate phrases and ways to like change the mood so that it becomes a little bit more productive. And this one isn't necessarily just for like business, although a lot of people buy this book for business. You know, it just talks about like, you know, diffusing tough personal conversations as well. And then the other one, which is an oldie but a goodie, and I'm sure everyone's heard of it, but it's called How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, which I think everyone should just read.
Excellent. You know, I want to ask Megan and Owens for some final pieces of advice. But before we do, I don't want to forget to ask Megan the same question we asked Owen. Megan, what do you wish more designers did to help you do your job better?
One thing I wish that designers did a little more is let go of your work a little bit earlier. I'll sometimes have a problem where I need to start a project for like the deadline's coming, whatever else. I just have hours, whatever it is. And they'll be like, oh no, the PSDs aren't quite ready yet. We've got another round of feedback. And it's like, no, just send them on. You don't have to hold on to them. They don't have to be perfect. Just tell me what changed later. So that's perfectly okay. You can let go a little bit. Feel free to hand it off and we can have conversations about the changes. In fact, it might be faster for me to make the changes than for you to go through all the PSDs.
Right.
So I think that's one piece of advice. Also, I think it's good to communicate what's in your PSDs. I've come across this a couple times where some designers use layer comps. Some people just have like groups of layers and things like that. And sometimes I miss things because I don't work in Photoshop every day. So I know this came up recently where it's like, oh yeah, there's supposed to be a carousel in that one part of that one design. And I was like, wait, I don't remember seeing that. There was just an image there, right? And then I look back in the PSD and sure enough, there in like a layer that was like hidden were like the arrow buttons. So yeah, it's good to communicate and go over the files, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. One of my things I hate the most, and Leia's never done this to me, but is that you get a PSD and nothing's organized in it. And it's, you know, half the stuff's turned off. It's all in just a series of layers and nothing's named in any semantic way that gives me any context. And then I have to go back and be like, well, what's happening here? And what's this for? Is this a special state or is this, you know, something that you just forgot to remove from the whole file? But then another thing that I love, Leia has started doing for me as a developer, and it saves me some time, is not only does she tell me what's in the PSD, but she extracts out certain things in the PSD, like colors and font sizes and things like that. So when I'm getting like my, you know, SAS variables and stuff set up, I don't even have to open the PSD. I'm just going through her list of all the different typography choices and sizes and the colors that, you know, she's decided on. I don't have to use the eyedropper.
Well, especially because I sometimes am lazy in my PSDs and I start using the eyedropper even though it can be inaccurate. So I want to make sure that you use the right blue from my initial design choice than the lazy eyedropper blue that I just shoved in.
I feel like it happens to me on every single project. I just provide Megan with a flattened file. Isn't that the way that everyone else does it? It can never be changed, never be modified. Right?
I am so glad you're kidding.
I'm joking, of course.
All right, before we wrap up, you know, Megan just offered some final pieces of advice to developers. Owen, do you have a final piece of advice for designers to help them work better with developers? Something that you've learned along the way that's really crucial?
Yeah, I'd say it's actually very similar. I'd say the big thing is inviting people into your process. I think as designers, we like to go off and really kind of like hone our idea, and we don't want to share it with anybody until it's fully baked, because we're afraid it's going to, you know, break in half, and it's just very incredibly fragile. So I'd say the biggest thing is like to share more often and early. That some of the best ideas are not the initial ones you have, but the ones that come out of conversation. And then it kind of just the end point is like, for me, is like to be honest and be flexible and be willing and ready to educate everyone around you about the reasons why you're making the decisions you're making. If you can't sell your ideas to your coworkers and the people working with you on the project, there's no way you'll be able to sell them to clients.
Totally.
So true. Mm-hmm. How about you, Megan? Is there something you could say to fellow developers that you've learned that's been really important in helping you work well with other designers?
Yeah. A few pieces of advice, I guess, would be, I think it's helped me a lot that I know a little bit of design language. So if Owen says like kerning or tracking, I know he's talking about like letter spacing or letting is like line height. So we know right. some of the same words. So it avoids some confusion. And also, Owen says he likes it when developers give like alternatives. He totally got that because I do that. I think it's really easy to say no and just stop there. And it's a lot harder and a lot more valuable to say why you can't do it. So a little bit of education, just like Owen said the other way. Providing a little bit of education and providing alternatives is so valuable. And you can come to a decision much quicker instead of fighting about it. It's like, I can't do this, but I can do this or this. And that helps a lot.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better. Let's start with Megan.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I think so.
Okay. Question one. Android or iOS?
iOS.
If you were stranded on a desert island and can only bring three things, what would you bring?
My sketchbook, because there's no power. Any devices would be useless. Unless I had a generator, that would be nice. Let's see. So definitely my sketchbook. I'm trying to think what else. Like, I'm a very practical person, so I want to just say, like, food and water is my other two things.
That works. What's your favorite TV show?
Oh, tough question. I don't watch a lot of TV. Psych was an old favorite, oddly enough. Oh, I like yeah. kind of those like
I love
funny
that show.
I like those kind of funny TV shows you can have on in the background and mm-hmm. all that,
so. What's your favorite dessert?
Ooh. Probably my aunt's bomb, which is like a chocolatey parfait kind of thing that's got Ooh. Like brownie and chocolate pudding and then like whipped cream on top.
Yum. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Illustration, I guess. It's something I do on the side already. I don't know if I could do it professionally because that might suck the fun out of it, but there is that.
What profession would you not like to try?
Garbage collector.
What's the latest article or blog post you read?
One of my coworkers, actually. My coworker, Kurt, a user experience designer, released a blog post, I think this morning, where they did some research on eye tracking and custom scroll elements.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Ooh, there are so many. I think I would want to be like Iron Man.
Nice.
Have the intelligence to build anything that I wanted.
Nice. What music do you like to work to?
Kind of alternative rock kind of stuff. I've got kind of a mix of things that I have playing, but I often listen to the same stuff over and over. I feel like it's stuff I've gotten used to, so it's both soothing and not distracting, even though it's like not classical music. But like trying to think of what I listen to, The Blue Van, Florence and the Machine, that kind of stuff.
All right, last question. Cats or dogs?
Cats. Do I want to get a dog?
Now it's your turn, Owen.
All right.
All right. Question one, Android or iOS?
iOS.
If you were stranded on a desert island and could only bring three things, what would you bring?
A peanut butter, another jar of peanut butter, and probably some dark chocolate.
Yum. What's your favorite TV show?
I love Psych. I don't really have one right now, but Psych is definitely high on my list, oddly enough. But The Sopranos is probably my favorite TV show of all time.
What's your favorite dessert?
Brownies in any form, especially when it's made into like a sort of like a, a castle. Or, stacked on top of each other.
With peanut butter and dark chocolate?
Exactly.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I like to work with wood, so like cabinet making I think would be a lot of fun.
Cool.
Chair making, something that was still required a lot of like thought process and pain.
What profession would you not like to try?
Megan already took, I think they make a lot of money collecting trash though. I wouldn't want to be a project manager. That looks like a really hard job.
What's the latest article or blog post you read?
Actually, this read one by Rob Ford. He's the founder of FWA, and it was an article on why we should appreciate Flash from a historical reference that I thought was an interesting read.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
The ability to rewind 30 seconds.
What music do you like to work to?
I'm pretty eclectic. I listen to a lot of different stuff. It depends on my mood. If I'm tired, I usually listen to hip hop. If I'm already upbeat, I'll listen to the Beatles or some good rock and roll music. Just pretty much everything, except for country music. I'm not a big country music fan.
All right, lastly, cats or dogs?
Dogs, all the way.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online, Megan?
Twitter's probably the best. I'm at Megan's Lock, though I think I'm the only Megan's Lock in the world, so it's probably not hard to find me. Also on LinkedIn and pretty much everything else.
How about you, Owen?
I'm on the Twitter. I'm on the LinkedIn. I got a website. Check out my work. Email me. Let me know what you think. I love hearing from people.
Thanks again. This was a really fun conversation.
Thank you. We really enjoyed
it. Thank
you.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Ellis Lab.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, Devotee, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we will talk about craft e-commerce with Luke Holder. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.